Christine Hamby. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. Anyone who is standing may be seated. And good morning to everyone. Our first case of the day is Turo versus Frakes. And we will begin by introducing members of the court, and then we will recognize the parties arguing for us today. I am Mike Havigan, and I am the Chief Justice here in the Court of Appeals courtroom in Lincoln. And by order of seniority of service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Jeff Bob. Good morning.
Jonathan Papik.
And Justice Frydenberg is, are you with us? Justice Frydenberg is recused in this matter. I'm sorry, yes. So, Mr. Tyrrell, are you with us this morning? Well, we couldn't hear you there, but we'll check that.
Good morning, Your Honor. Yes, I am.
Good morning to you. And Mr. Campbell, are you with us this morning?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. So, Mr. Tyrrell, this is how we operate, and Mr. Campbell also. Each of you have 10 minutes to argue. Mr. Tyrrell, you can reserve up to 2 minutes of time for rebuttal. Do you wish to do that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. And do either party have a question for me at the moment?
Not at this time.
No, Your Honor.
Very well. We will then begin. And Mr. Tyrrell, do you understand that members of the court may ask you questions during your presentation?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Very good. We will begin then, Mr. Tyrrell. Again, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Okay, good morning, thank you. I guess initially I'd just like to highlight the case that this is an appeal asking this court to reverse the decision of the Lancaster District Court when it granted the motion to quash the habeas corpus that was filed. I believe that the habeas corpus meets the criteria of the statute, as well as the fact that this court has previously entertained habeas corpuses that deal with parole revocation hearings. I also believe that the order of the court in Lancaster District Court didn't even address whether or not the appellant is unlawfully detained. The habeas was dismissed merely on the fact that the habeas is a addressing a parole revocation hearing. The way I understand it, the as long as the criteria of the statute is met, the court is required to review a habeas corpus sua sponte. Excuse my Latin if I don't say that correctly, I don't think that the court did that. I think that what happened, it just invited the state to respond to the habeas, invited the state to file a motion to quash, which they did, and didn't address the merits of the case. I think that Packingham versus North Carolina is very instrumental in the situation, as well as Doe versus Nebraska. And of course, Mutter versus Ross from West Virginia has a lot of persuasive value in this case. In Mutter versus Ross, the court held that a parolee cannot be restricted from social media. And that's what happened in this situation, was that the liberty of parole was revoked, which the court has previously stated in State or Davis versus State is a valuable liberty interest. And of course, that also is one of the conditions of habeas corpus. And not only was there wasn't any kind of, I think the record demonstrates that there wasn't any allegations of nefarious activity. In fact, I would argue that just as Packingham versus North Carolina stated that the internet can be used for beneficial purposes, legitimate purposes, that was what was happening in this case. And I think that obviously Packingham versus North Carolina addressed some free speech issues, which this court has not addressed yet, as far as, you know, whether or not how Packingham versus North Carolina should be applied in this situation. I mean, I'm eager for the court to make a ruling in that regard. Because something as simple as what is actually happening in this situation right now, appearing before the court over this WebEx, is technically a violation of parole in Nebraska. And I think that's a violation of free speech. I don't think that it's appropriate for the Nebraska Parole Board to revoke what is this court has described as a valuable liberty interest when it's protected by free speech under the First Amendment. There are obviously one of the things that has not also been addressed by the court yet is the statute which restricts the Nebraska Parole Board on which conditions it can impose. And I think it's interesting the phraseology that's used with the statute dealing with the condition. I believe that this condition would actually, in addition to Packingham versus North Carolina, this statute, Nebraska Revised Statute 83-1,116, subsections 1H, would prevent the Nebraska Parole Board from imposing a restriction to social media as well, because it states that a parolee must satisfy any conditions related to the cause of offense, his or her offense, and not unduly restrictive of his or her liberty. And I believe that restricting access to social media not only is unduly restrictive, but I also believe that it's, in this situation, this case, is not specifically related to the cause of his offense.
Bob, let me ask you a question about that. Was that an argument that you raised before the district court?
Thank you, Your Honor. I had actually requested to amend the petition in district court And that was identified as one of the items that I would like to have added to the complaint, the petition for habeas corpus. But the corp, as described in the brief, that is actually another issue. I'm asking the court to rule that it was an abuse of discretion for the lower court when it did not allow the appellant to amend the petition.
Before your time expires, would you address the jurisdictional challenge raised by the state?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Your Honor. I think that the jurisdictional question is addressed in the recent decision of this court in TDP Phase 1 LLC versus Club at the Yard LLC, when this court said that whenever there are multiple causes of action and one cause of action is not, there's not a final order given in one cause of action, that the matter stays together in the lower court. And so I think that this case would address that issue, that this court does have jurisdiction because a final order was not issued until, I don't have the exact date, I think it was June 30th. So, and if an appeal was timely filed.
Mr. Tiro, do you wish to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very good. Thank you very much. Mr. Campbell, again, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'd like to start by addressing Justice Castle's question about jurisdiction and the timeliness of this appeal. On further reflection, and as Mr. Terrell mentioned, the recent decision of this court in TDP Phase 1 versus Club at the Yard, we think that this was a timely appeal. I think the clarity provided by that court and that decision makes that clear. We think that Nebraska Revised Statute 25-1315, the rule that governs cases with multiple claims, that does in fact apply to this case. And so for that reason, we think that's the better view of that threshold jurisdictional question. Now, to turn to the issue at the heart of this appeal and explain the two main reasons why state habeas relief is not available in this case, that's what I'd like to do now. The first reason is that because Mr. Terrell has already been convicted, state habeas relief is available only if the conviction, sentence, and commitment are all void. But his challenge to the parole revocation does not even contest his original conviction or original sentence. Thus, he's not entitled to habeas relief. Second, Mr. Terrell has not alleged facts to establish that the parole board's revocation order is void. An order is void only if the tribunal that issued it lacked jurisdiction. But none of his arguments allege that the parole board lacked jurisdiction to revoke his parole. Nor could he, because Nebraska statutes clearly give the board that power. As a result, habeas relief is not available here. Now,
I beg your pardon, Mr. Campbell. When you refer to conviction, what conviction do you assert is before us at this time?
I think when I refer to conviction, I'm referring to the original conviction that he is serving time for right now. I think that is the language. So to go with first principles, if we start with the statute itself, the language of the habeas statute, which I believe is 29-2801. If we go there, it specifically exempts anyone who, I don't have the exact language in front of me, but it's something like has been convicted of an offense for which he stands committed. And because Mr. Terrell has been convicted, he falls within that exemption to the statute, and for that reason, he can't take advantage of some of the broader language in the statute. He has to show that his original conviction, sentence, and commitment, this commitment, are all void, and I don't think he can show that, and indeed, he doesn't even allege that in this case.
So if I may then, for which he stands committed, is that right? Is that statutory language?
That is the statutory language.
And why is he committed at this time?
Your Honor, he's committed at this time, I think, for two reasons. First and foremost, because he was originally convicted of his offense, which there were a couple offenses, one of which involved sexual assault, I believe. And then the second reason is he was given the grace of being let out on parole, and then he violated a condition of parole, and so he's been committed again. But I think both of those are indispensable, and because both the original conviction and the violation of the parole condition are indispensable, that he falls within that exemption and can't take advantage of the language in the statute. Now, I'd like to specifically point the court to one of the cases that Mr. Terrell relies on, and that's the 1986 decision of this court in Herbeck versus Shortridge. It's cited in both his brief and in our brief.
Before you get into that portion of your argument, your brief suggests that the state believes that Mr. Terrell had the opportunity to, I think the brief uses the word appeal from the revocation of probation. What procedural device or procedure does the state maintain was available and that he should have used?
A petition in error, Your Honor. Under 25-1901, Mr. Terrell could have pursued a petition in error. He had 30 days to do so. He could have filed that. And because what the board did in this case was operating in a judicial capacity and a judicial function, a petition in error would have been an appropriate way to challenge. Indeed, he did in fact file a petition in error in the court below, but he did it nearly a year after the board's decision. And as he admitted to the district court, it was time. But that would have been an available mechanism. To get back to the Herbeck versus Shortridge case, I think while Mr. Terrell cites that case to support himself, it actually supports the state. Now, there an inmate filed a habeas petition challenging the parole board's refusal to rehear his parole revocation. But the court rejected the habeas claim, and in doing so, relied on the very rule that we advance here. The court said, and I quote, "In the case of a prisoner held pursuant to a judgment of conviction, habeas corpus is available as a remedy only upon a showing that the judgment, sentence, and commitment are void. Since the petitioner there, just like Mr. Terrell here, was challenging only the board revocation rather than the original conviction and sentence, habeas relief did not apply." Now, notably, the court in that case, in that Herbeck case, also said, and again I quote, "A proceeding in error, not habeas corpus, is the sole avenue for obtaining a review of this prison disciplinary action." And so those two statements from Herbeck are very relevant to this court's analysis, and I believe squarely support the district court's decision in this case. Mr. Terrell also argues and relies heavily on an unpublished federal district court decision in the Arias versus Casimir case. But as we've explained in our brief, there are a number of reasons why his reliance on that case is misplaced. First and most importantly, the first part of the Arias opinion cites many Nebraska cases that indicate habeas relief is not available to challenge the denial of parole. Second, the other half of the opinion, which is the part that talks about habeas relief in broader terms, is simply inapplicable here. And this gets back to the discussion I had with Justice Miller-Lerman, which is in Sanders versus Frakes, this court clarified that the state's habeas statute exempts post-conviction inmates like Mr. Terrell. Thus, the broad language that Arias quotes from the habeas statute simply does not apply in this case. One final point to make, unless the court has other questions, is it's just a bedrock principle that this court has stated time and again. and that is habeas corpus is not a substitute for an appeal. As I explained to Justice Castle, there was an opportunity to appeal the board revocation order through, or the parole revocation order through a petition in error. But that wasn't timely filed or pursued here, and habeas does not provide Mr. Terrell with another bite at the apple. Unless the court has any further questions, I'm happy to cede the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 46 seconds. We'll give you 2 minutes, Mr. Terrell.
Hey, yeah, thank you, Your Honor. Just to reiterate, I think what separates the petition in error from the habeas corpus is that the situation or the facts of this case better fit the habeas corpus than the petition in error. Parole is a liberty. It's not anything that's guaranteed, but it's this court, again, has described it as a valuable liberty. The appellant has alleged that he is unlawfully deprived. And also this court has previously stated that when release is sought, that habeas corpus is the correct remedy to utilize in this situation. I would also point to the fact that in my research, it seems as though I have been unable to find any state in the United States which does not allow a parolee to request a release under the habeas corpus statute of their particular state. In fact, just the opposite. In every situation that I've researched, every state allows parole revocation hearings to be addressed under the habeas corpus statute. And again, I think that that's obvious, especially with the Mutter versus Ross decision. As the Mutter versus Ross addressed the was filed under it as a habeas corpus, and the court granted that. And just in summary, in Packingham versus North Carolina, the court found that statute applied to people that were on parole, and the court made no exception that it did not apply to anybody on parole. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in Terrell versus Frakes. Mr. Terrell and Mr. Campbell, you are excused, and thank you again for participating by WebEx. The court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Wheeler.